listeners know I love e-commerce for IT services. But am I right? Let's talk to a marketing expert. Michelle Nedelec joins us on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. So we were talking a little bit before the show, and I talked to IT services companies and MSPs, and these are the people doing the dirty work of delivering IT services generally for small companies. How does what you do relate to them?
Awesome. So what we tend to do is cobble the cobbler's children, meaning that we help them improve their online presence, their marketing, their strategies, and being able to market them on the online world.
Okay, so I'm going to dive right in on this. And I'm going to say, like, one of the things that I've put forth as a premise to this audience is that they're woefully behind on e-commerce, that you can buy homes and cars or sign up for banks, get new lawyers, get new insurance. But heaven forbid you try and buy IT services via a website, you're at best given a contact us form or a phone number. And my premise is this is woefully behind the times, and you can sell complex services via the web. What's your take on that premise?
Absolutely. You're preaching to the choir, because I firmly believe that a lot of businesses that once upon a time thought that they had to be bricks and mortar, they had to be face to face, they don't. And in the last few years, we've noticed that the ones that took on the digital world the fastest tended to grow the most robustly. But just because somebody didn't take that on, if they've survive the long and narrow now, they still have an opportunity to be able to jump in on the digital world. And there's tons of different ways that people can do it. I mean, if you look at beer companies, it used to be the Budweiser, you had to be in the States, Corona, you had to be in Mexico. And they basically launched or licensed their recipes so that now they're brewed locally, but with the exact same flavor palette that each one has being sold internationally. So if you take that kind of recipe and apply it to the IT world, you can actually do IT anywhere on the planet.
Okay, but I'm hearing all the time, the pushback I get continually is, well, this is a really complicated, contemplative, consultative sale. I can't possibly just put up a store and sell it. Okay, what do you say to those people?
I say, if you have a highly complex system that is actually different than everybody else's, fantastic. That makes you even more important to be selling internationally to a digital market, because obviously everybody's going to need, or there's going to be more people out there that are needing your product than are necessarily in your city, unless it's something really specific to Silicon Valley and only people in Silicon Valley need it. Then it really can be applied to everyone anywhere. And there's tons of different ways of being able to implement it. The fulfillment side of a business, if it's looked at with outside eyes, can see ideas and ingenuity that somebody looking at it from the inside can't necessarily see. We get tons of examples of this. And it might mean, you know, for instance, hiring somebody that is local to be able to go in, and they have maybe a GoPro and a headset on, or Zoom or something like that, and they're showing the high-end techs what's going on. I mean, they've shown it in even bomb diffusers, right? You don't necessarily have to have the experience to be in front of the bomb. You can have a computer in front of a bomb and have the technician with the smarts on another side of the planet, but they have the ability to be able to control what's going on locally. When you look at the dynamics of those situations and bringing those forth into your circumstances, then all of a sudden you start to see, hey, maybe there is a possibility for how this might work out.
Okay, so let's try and make this concrete for people. Give me an example of like a good business-to-business digital engagement and what that kind of looks like.
But it can be as simple as if you as a company have answered the same question online three times. As my father used to say, once is an accident, twice is a mistake, three times it's a habit. As soon as it becomes a habit, you have the ability to be able to replicate that conversation. So you can videotape it. You can put it on an audiogram. There's a whole ton of things that you can do to be able to allow people to access that content when they want it. Because obviously you're not going to be available at 10 o'clock at night to be able to answer tech questions. But if you've already answered that question and you've reported that answer, somebody just needs to click on it, watch the video, they get the answer, That's perfect. That's exactly what you want. And that's automation at its best, because you're giving people access to you when they want it. And then when it comes time to giving the creative answer, the answer that only a human interacting with somebody else can give, you're giving those during appropriate times in meetings when they're asking for it. And it becomes that much more powerful.
Okay, you said the magic word, automation. Let's let's separate that out, though, a little bit. What's the difference between kind of marketing or business automation? Like, are there, because the word can mean different things in different spaces. Can you help me understand the different definitions here?
Absolutely. So marketing automation, per se, is when you're marketing to an audience that you may or may not be familiar with, but they have not yet bought from you. Or it could be somebody that's bought from you that you want to upsell, cross-sell, downsell to, which obviously you want to be able to segregate those people from each other in order to make your marketing more powerful. Before we get into how you do that, let's separate it into business automation, which is basically being able to take a process that you do over and over again and be able to put into place systems that will automatically do that for you. So a lot of people will hire admin people to do the repetitive things in a business that they can now do with a piece of software. The advantage of having a piece of software do it is they tend to be more accurate, they tend to be more predictable, and they're available 24/7, as opposed to having to train a new person and get them up to gear and hoping that they don't forget step 3 out of 27. Computers can just make those processes more predictable.
Well, we've got a technical audience here, and I know they're immediately, you apply that. Like, so how do you do some of these things? Give a sense of like how this stuff works.
So to give a little bit of background, so I'm the creative director for the company, and my partner in business has been, and pleasure, as we like to say, is in charge of the tech side of the company. So he has been project manager of special projects, things that hadn't been done before. He would go in and do quotes and have it, you know, on time, on budget, millions of dollars worth of projects. So if you want the techie side of things, he'd be happy to start speaking jargon with you. That's not my realm. However, within that, what we do is get him to go into a company, do an analysis of their tech, see where they're at, what software they have, what's integrated, what's not integrated, what needs to have connectors and APIs and all that kind of fun jazz doing the connecting, and how a company might be able to be more proficient at it. So we tend to bring in Infusionsoft or Keep Max Classic, as it's now called, to be able to integrate systems because of the APIs that it has and the abilities that it has within the system. Now, a lot of people think it's complicated, and it is. In our opinion, it's robust, and you want a system that's robust when you have a complex business that you want to start automating different aspects of it and not have to have as much human interactions in those automation processes.
But if we're stepping one level up from that, before we don't need to go quite that level of depth with the tools, what do you view as kind of the main components then that you have to have in a kind of digital marketing strategy? Like there are general buckets. What are those general buckets?
One, you have to have a website. Absolutely. Okay. And it has to be a WordPress site. So if you think that Wix or things like that will do the job, they won't. They don't have the back end to be able to connect data. Let's just keep it at that. Second thing is your CRM or your content management systems have to be able to play into that. So a lot of people think, oh, I'm business to business, I just do all my business over the phone. Well, then your phone becomes your CRM, and it has to be able to connect into other databases so that sales and marketing and accounting are all talking about with the same data of the same person. So you know what they've paid for, you know what they haven't paid for. You're all interacting with the same piece of data, not one that needs to be manually updated. So if you look at the data within your office and you say, well, how does your data integrate? And if the answer is manually, you have an issue. And you have a very complex issue because you're probably losing data. You have dirty data, which I love to say. And you're probably, you're having a delay in data. So what one person is looking at isn't necessarily updated in the right departments, whether it's legal or accounting or whatever. Those become the problems.
Yeah, but when I hear people talk about like must have a website, I think they immediately go to the basic of it's going to have five pages. There's going to be an about. There's going to be a services. There's going to be a case study tab, right? There's going to be a form and an email address. Or in the other extreme, they think it has to be Amazon.com, where it's this giant store and fully configurable. I think what you're describing is much more in between. Give me a little bit of a specific sense of like, what are the things you think are the basic requirements on the in-between space?
Nice. So in the digital world, most companies have what we call a ladder of ascension. And it's basically, it allows prospects to be able to take a step up with you with a higher level of commitment as they move forward. And most people will talk about a ladder of ascension in a B2C circumstance, which is absolutely true. In every B2C, you should always have a ladder of ascension. In a B2B conversation, it becomes a little more... or a little less talked about, but it still becomes just as important. People need to be able to get the information that they want from you when they want it. And that might mean that they need a report, they need a white sheet, that they need a checklist, that they want something from you that says, this is your level of competency, this is your level of understanding of my problems, this is how you interact with your clients. And if they get to your website and it just says, hey, phone us during 9 to 5 hours, then that's not going to cut it, because they're going to move on to somebody else and they're going to find somebody that will give them the information that they're looking for. And again, whether it's a video about something that they're looking for, or just a checklist that they can download. But most people aren't, in the B2B world, aren't looking at that acumen as, or those assets as something that people want. They think that they want just a person-to-person interaction, and it's not true. In this digital world, and you know it, when you go to look for something, what's the first thing you do? You Google it. That's why it's a verb. So if your company isn't providing information, whether it's a chat bot on your website, whether it's the information that everybody always asks, like, what do you guys do? Do I need to have this, that, or the other thing? And it's not just a matter of having a FAQ section on your website or an about, although those are essential as well. It's being able to have something that they can interact with and something that they can go from, I don't know you, to I know you a little bit. And then you tell them what their next step is, which everybody calls a call to action or a CTA. You want to have one of those at the end of everyone, and you want to pepper that next step into every piece of assets that you're giving your potential clients.
People are always looking at this from a tools perspective and trying to figure out all the buckets and all the parts they need to have when they're putting together automation. What's your direction that you give to people you're working with here?
Well, I hope I'm giving you the right answer to what you're looking for, but there really aren't a whole lot of buckets. A lot of people will overcomplicate their tech so badly that they start to create what I like to call Frankenware. And that's where we started too. It was like, oh, I need a shopping cart. I need an email delivery system. I need this. I need that. I need it to have this. And we create Frankenware. And as soon as somebody updates something, poor Frank is losing a limb. He's losing an eye. Things aren't working. They're losing data. And really, comes down to, you need a robust CRM that can handle your email. It can handle, obviously, your client data. And you want one that's client data centric, because a lot of systems out there are funnel centric, or they're the email campaign centric. They're more worried about the sale than they are about the client. If your CRM is CRM concentric or database concentric, then it means that you have the ability to then, after they've done their initial purchase, to be able to go back and upsell, downsell, cross-sell, which is where the majority of your profit is. Your acquisition, client acquisition, is your most expensive cost in a business. And when you understand that you really want to be able to get the back-end services and products in there, that's when, as a business, you start becoming most profitable. So you want your CRM data concentric. You want to have it integrating with your email campaigns. You also want to have these crazy things called affiliate links, which means that you're allowing other people that already have your ideal client as their tribe, promoting you and your services and saying, hey, these guys are awesome, come do this. And then they get paid a percentage. It's like having 100% commission, but this person already has the attention of your ideal client. It's awesome. If you've never heard of affiliate marketing, you have to. And if you find a group where they're relationship oriented as opposed to transaction oriented, they're even better. So it, like any industry, has its ups and downs. And you also want to be able to have your e-commerce in there, because there's certain things that you're going to be able to offer people that you want to be able to collect a credit card off of them right away. And you may not have that system in place right now, but when you start to understand more of the digital world and how it works, you start to realize that there's a lot that you can be doing to be able to incorporate that e-commerce. And of course, you want to be able to have a dashboard where it becomes easy for you to be able to see what's going on, what your numbers are, what your conversion rates are. Being able to understand that when you put money into an ad account, that it's actually converting into leads that are potential buyers, not just random leads, but people that are interested in your products or consuming your products, and they're going to move forward with you. And all of that data piece can be in one piece of software. You have your website that integrates with it, and that's really all you need. Then you just have to work it. And working it is probably the hardest thing, because most people don't like working their systems.
Yeah. There's a lot in, you said a lot in there, and actually I want to try and unpack a little bit of it, because oftentimes when I'm talking to listeners of this show, they all fall back on, well, our greatest source is referral business, right? And it's, you know, and you immediately, when you hear everything that you've just explained, it mentally kind of pops a fuse, because they're like, well, I can just go ask people for referrals, and that's always driven my business. And then this jump to the digital, how would you direct somebody to link those two efforts?
Absolutely. So one, referrals is always like the best way to get clients, absolutely bar none. And once you have a predictable system for getting referrals, you want to maximize on that, because now you know what conversation you want to have with people in order to be able to get the referrals. You know what kind of information that they're looking for. And going back to, if you've done it three times, it's a habit. Now you can start to figure out ways to automate that process so that you can go beyond just your clients. You can go to your peers. You can go to other people in the industry that have your ideal client, but that aren't in conflict with you. Then you can go beyond that once you've proven that that works too, and then go into the ad space. And then you're not just throwing money into the bonfire that can be the world of ads, because you've proven that it works in those different varieties. So with all of our clients, we could ask them to do what's called an internal launch first. So you're selling a certain product or service to your own people, people that have already expressed interest in you. Once you know that you can get a consistent conversion rate on that, then you go out to people that know, like, and trust you and are willing to promote you. Then once you get a proven conversion rate on that, then you can go out into the cold market and increase it. So it's not about not getting those referrals. It's about how do you take that conversation and make it powerful in the online world, which then means that you could get clients kind of beyond your salespeople's reach within your city, within your state, within your country, within the world.
So it sounds like, I mean, if someone was thinking about getting into delivering more services and provisioning more services electronically, you'd be pointing them at building out that kind of basic store for their own customers first. Is that fair? And how would you be approaching that?
Absolutely. So your clients are going to be most apt to having conversations with you of, you know, what do you want? And it might not even be that you have to ask them. They're just asking you on a regular basis. If you're getting like three emails a day going, hey, do you have information about this thing? Then clearly that thing becomes important. And it might just be kind of the quote unquote user's manual for it. Awesome. Well, then digitize the user manual, put it up there and say, yeah, for your name and email, happily deliver you the PDF for this user manual. It's being able to give people the information that they're looking for when they're looking for it. And your own audience is consistently asking you questions. Otherwise, it wouldn't be your clients, right? So you know what kind of conversations you're having. And some people are having voice to voice. Some people are doing email. Some people are doing it written. Some people are asking you for content that maybe you don't know, and you're having to go and ask other people for it, but then go and ask those people internally, hey, how often do you get asked this question? And would it make sense to be able to turn it into a digital asset that we might be able to either give away for free or ask for something in return? And the other mistake that a lot of people do is they might have those assets, but it's like, click here to get that asset, and it just opens up. So you're not asking people for some level of commitment, whether it's just their name and email address, in exchange for that data. And that's absolutely okay, because clearly they've gone to you to look for it.
Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio. Or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.